What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you are tuned in to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in. As always, first things first, follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Nobody is listening to that part because my Twitter followers have been the same forever, and that's okay. I don't care. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database, base with two S's. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat, youtube.com/kindaneat, where you're going to see our guest today, Milo, who is performing as Scallops Hotel, perform a song that I don't know the name of because Milo's songs are always crazily named. But it was good. It was tight. I like Milo. We had a great conversation today. KindaNeat.net. Everything is wrapped up in a pretty package. And don't forget to download the podcast app. Search for Kinda Neat and please subscribe. Please leave us a comment and a 5-star rating. We got a few new ones, so thank you guys for doing that. I appreciate it. This is officially our 5th episode in a row. That's so crazy. We're on a real hot streak. I probably just jinxed it, but that's okay. Next week, I'm probably not going to put out an episode next week because I'm going to be in Alaska, but we will have one soon when I get back. Hopefully, it'll be a great one. I'm sure it will because we never do anything whack. Fuck, man. Right before I left my house, I'm recording this on Thursday, August the 5th or 6th. I don't know, whatever day Thursday is. Dr. Dre's new album, Compton, is streaming on iTunes right now. Can't buy it yet, but I listened to the stream. I didn't have that much time to listen because it started streaming about 20 minutes before I needed to get in my car and head over here. But we have a fucking friend, a friend of the show, a friend in life, a person that I just like is so talented that I've been screaming his name from the ceiling since 2011. Our friend Anderson Paak is on the record 6 times. He's on 6 different songs, recording songs with legends like Ice Cube, Eminem, Kendrick, and he had one song in particular. I was skipping around just to kind of hear his parts, and the one that really jumped out to me is his performance on Animals is amazing. So at this point, when this podcast comes out, the record will have been available and I'm sure everybody will hear it and everyone's either going to say that it's a classic or that it's whack or whatever, but everybody's going to have their opinion and the way the internet works, maybe by fucking Wednesday, it's not even going to be getting talked about anymore. Who knows? But I'm really proud of the guy and just really happy to have watched his rise. Here's the thing. I think that when I was at Knox City in 2011, we may or may not, I'm pretty sure that we were his first video on YouTube. And I just kind of want to tell the story that the history that I have with him because I, you know, it's just been so awesome to watch. And I feel like this is a real early crescendo moment. Like this is kind of his hello world moment. And I still to this day think like he's going to be huge. Like, you know, he's going to be like a Grammy nominee type of dude. And I saw that from the first time I ever met him was back in 2009. It was around the time that me and Verbs, or Verbs and I, were recording the Buzz EP. And that was like a really fucking fun rap summer. Like, I was almost done with Girls Like Me. And just in the middle of working on Girls Like Me, Verbs and I kind of started hanging out more, or just kind of realizing, like, oh, you live right down the street from me. And so I was giving him rides back to his crib and he would be playing me beats and I'd go, oh, I want to rap on that. And then being around him really advanced my rapping styles and abilities. Like he was just a very inspiring dude to be around, and recording that EP with him was like a big stylistic leap for me. And I just learned a lot about the craft by working with someone else that was so good at their craft. But at that time he was already doing, I think he had just started Bananas. It was after the spliff, I think, but and it was probably after we put out the EP. But in 2009, we put out the EP, and then afterwards, he started Bananas. And he kept talking about this dude, Breezy Lovejoy. Oh, man, you got to hear Breezy Lovejoy. Like, we should have him do beats for the next Buzz EP and this, that, and the other. And then he had him play at Bananas, and here's this dude, real handsome, smiley, like looks like a Cuba Gooding Jr. kind of, like he looks like a star, you feel me? Like, and he's playing drums and singing, and he has this song, You Don't Have to Wear Drawers Around Me. I don't really remember how it goes, but it's like, kind of like, you don't have to wear no drawers. And I thought that was a very ballsy thing to say. Like, that's dope. I think that's a tight song, and it had a sexy vibe, and he's playing drums and singing at the same time. And I was like, this is fucking amazing. And I went up to him afterwards, and I was like, damn, yo, Verbs has been telling me about you. That set was so tight, and, you know, we should work. And he was very nice and just like, yeah, we should work. Like, yeah, I heard the Buzz EP. Like, yeah, let's work, dude. Verbs is my dude, blah, 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 blah. Cool. Let's do that. And we kept in loose touch. And then in 2011... November 31st, 2010, I lost my job. I got laid off right before Christmas, and that was the moment that everything kind of changed, because I haven't had a job since then. And I already had a meeting with the Knocksteady team the night that I got laid off. It was a Friday, and I already had plans to go meet them because we were going to talk about doing some like video work together. They wanted me to like come be a video personality in the time that I had. And so I had a bunch of ideas, and I was going to go have a meeting with them. And so after I got laid off, I went, well, I better make this meeting count. So I bought a pizza and some beers and went to their office downtown and said, hey guys, this fucking meeting has taken a drastic change because I really need to work with you guys because I just lost my job and I want to be a part of this. And so it turns out that we started working together, and then it started off small, me doing little things, blog posts, taking pictures, writing, et cetera, et cetera. And then it quickly became apparent that like I needed to do a lot more, that I could do a lot more. And so, you know, they had this one thing, they had this Knocksteady Live Fridays that they did, and then they only did one or two, and then it never happened again. And I went, yo, why aren't we doing that? We should do that all the time, Knocksteady Live Fridays. And so if you go back in the internet and do the research, the first Knocksteady Live Fridays I did was I had Mike Eagle come on, and we just kind of winged it. And we just did a show, and I said, I'll just make it like a show, and we'll record the audio, have the person perform four songs, and then put it out as a podcast. And then we'll make like a summary video or something, right? And that quickly evolved from that into other stuff. But the first guest was Mike Eagle. Mike Eagle is killing it right now. Mike Eagle was just on Hannibal Buress' show. Mike Eagle put out a great rap record in 2014 and continues to kill it frequently. He has a hugely successful podcast. You know, he's crushing it. We were early on that. My second guest ever on Knocksteady Live was Raquel Rodriguez. She's killing it right now. You guys know Raquel. She's been on this show too. And I've done tons of work with her on my records and on her records. And then the third guest that I ever had, because they went, oh, I don't, you know, this guy that was kind of like the owner of it went, I don't want it to just be a rap show always. So like, let's do other stuff. So that's why we brought Raquel in. He goes, yeah, that was great. Let's do like an R&B dude type of person. I said, man, I have this fucking guy that can like rap and sing. We should have this dude Breezy Lovejoy on. This is the third episode of Knocksteady Live ever. And we couldn't find anything about him online. Like, it was so difficult to find any recorded music, and we had a hell of a time. And I was just trying to convince him, like, look, trust me, I've seen this dude live a couple times. He's so dope. He can fucking sing his ass off. He can rap. Trust me, this will be tight. And then we schedule it, and they don't show up. They're like 1 hour late, and then nobody's answering the phone. Then they're 2 hours late, and nobody's answering the phone. They're 3 hours late, nobody's answering the phone. To the point where I got so fucking bummed and mad that I had vouched and that they weren't showing up, and it made me look like I was failing. By the fourth hour, that I was like, man, fuck this shit. This bullshit. Fuck it. Even if they call, fuck this. We're not going to have them on. Like, I'm going to cancel this. We'll do another one. And then around the fourth hour, they call. Yo, sorry. I can't remember what the excuse was. Probably like my phone was dead or something. But also, it turns out they were coming from Oxnard and just living hella far away and caught in traffic, this, that, and the other. So, but finally, they show up 4 hours late. And part of me went like, yo, I don't want to do this episode. Like, I'm so fucking pissed that they're so late. And like, the homies were just like, nah, just do it. It'll be fine. And so we did. We turned on the camera and we went live and did an episode. And it was amazing. Like, it was awesome watching him perform just the four songs and doing the podcast and the interview, it was so astounding how fucking talented he was and how multifaceted he was. And he didn't even bring in the drums, like, let alone like the drums were like just icing on the cake that he could do all that and play drums at the same time. And we ended up putting out the video for Rosalia, and it's still online. You can search Breezy Lovejoy Knocksteady or Breezy Lovejoy Rosalia, and you'll see it was in March of 2011, I think. And that was his introduction to the world of YouTube. And it was to the point where he was so fucking talented that, like, my friends that don't know shit about music, who were just kind of like on some, oh yeah, oh, you're doing some weird multimedia shit, sure, I'll check it out. They were like, dude, what the fuck? Breezy Lovejoy is so tight. I fucking downloaded his podcast and I just listened to it on repeat. Like, I just fast forward to the song parts. Like, that shit is so tight. Like, to this day, they still have, like, sometimes the Breezy Lovejoy episode will come up on their iTunes on random. And it was just, like, very apparent that he had something that, like, other people that we had brought in occasionally didn't have. Like, he has a certain star quality that is very noticeable, right, when you meet him. And then when you hear him sing, it's like, holy shit. And so, anyways, time goes on. Towards the end of Knocksteady, when it was starting to fall apart for me, it was one of these things where it was like, they were like, oh, we should like manage an artist. Who should we manage? It's like, clearly we should try to like bring in Breezy and manage him, you know? And my whole thing was like, you know, we should get him to change his name, which was like pretty, which is, that was like one of the first things. I probably brought it up to him too soon, but I was like, yo, we should change your name and make it more marketable. And I don't know if I ever had anything to do with that decision in the long run, because Anderson .Paak was thought of long after I was not in the Knocksteady picture anymore. But we were like, yeah, let's try to like blow this artist up. And I quickly stepped out of that situation of management, because I realized that I was still like had too much art in me, I guess. Like, I didn't think it would be fair to try and manage somebody when I was still trying to like put out records myself. And in hindsight, I often like kind of joke like, oh, my biggest regret is that like I could have been his manager and I said no. But to be honest, like everything that's been happening for him, like all these amazing opportunities, they wouldn't have happened had I been managing. I would have been a shitty manager and I would have blown it. And then he would have either missed out on opportunities or he would have found a better manager anyway. So I'm glad that everything has worked out how it has, because it's been amazing to watch and I'm so happy for him. And just even during that time of him coming into the Knocksteady office every night and watching him write and watching him and Zoe start to make records together, his writing was developing so quickly then, like, and then over the years, like, man, I remember hearing Rilla the first time and being like, holy fuck, like Rilla, the Toki Monster song that he did was like so fucking amazing. And I'm like, damn, your writing has really taken off. And then hearing Drugs and being like, fuck, you're like viably, you make viable hit records, you know. Then he came on the show and did Suede, and we were blown away. To this day, I have Suede hidden on the channel. Like, you can't watch it, unfortunately, but because we had to take it down because of Stone's Throw. But just watching him perform Suede, and for that would, I swear to you, that would be our biggest video on the channel if it was still live. Like, it was, there was something, some magic happened that day where, like, the way I filmed it better than I've ever filmed any of these, and, like, just the look and the sound of it together, and like his outfit that he was wearing, everything. I was like, God fucking damn, this fool is like really on and is about to be famous as fuck. And the crazy shit is like last year in April, he opened for my record release party and they did me that favor and they came and played and blew the fucking spot up so much that like the Lyric Theater was like, yo, you're so dope, you should have a fucking residency here. And then every Tuesday in July of last year, there was 5 Tuesdays in July, he was playing a sold out show every Tuesday, 5 weeks in a row. And, you know, he was curating it cool. Like, there was dope acts, but people were clearly there to see him. And, I just am so fucking stoked to see him being used so much on Dr. Dre's album, and I just know that like he's gonna be a star, man. And I've been saying it for so long, and I'm just so fucking happy and excited to see him winning. And you know, thank you for everything that he's done for this channel. And I don't know. Anyway, I just wanted to tell that story because I just think it's tight, and I'm stoked. And people are going like, oh, you know, Breezy this and Breezy that. And I remember this and I remember that. And I go, hey, man, all that shit is like, I just think back to like Verbs telling me he was tight in 2009 and like Verbs being so right and us just being in the right place at the right time to like show him to people. And it's so tight. He sounds great on the record. I told my mom a similar version of that story, and she goes, well, too bad you didn't manage him. And I'm like, that was your takeaway? I'm like, I'm so happy. And she was like, you should have been managing him. You could have had a real job. And I'm like, ugh, what a mom thing to say. Anyway, I hope it didn't sound too like, oh, I'm giving him a handy. Or I hope that it didn't sound like self-aggrandizing. I just heard him on a record with that's the thing. I grew up listening. Dr. Dre, The Chronic dropped when I was 11, and I was like about a year too young to really love it. But I mean, I remember going to my first like junior high party at this girl Cinnamon's house, and we all went down to the basement, and it was like there was like red filtered lights in the basement, and there's all these girls there that like, you know, Jessica and Joy and all these people that I wanted to, like, I didn't know what I wanted to do, but I knew that, like, oh, these girls are, they're something, you know. And Cinnamon was this older girl. I can't believe her name was Cinnamon. That was her real name. But we were listening to the fucking Chronic, you know what I mean? And like that, I was like, damn, this is like edgy rap, you know what I'm saying? And like, even before that, in fourth grade, I had a friend named Richard who had the NWA records, and we would go sneak over to his house and steal his mom's tapes to listen to him. And the next year or 2 years later, when Snoop's album came out, it was all because Dr. Dre blew him the fuck up. And that was like one of the most seminal records in my life. The Doggy Style is like one of the biggest records that affected me the most in my life. So if somebody would have told the 11-year-old me, like, yo, one of your homies is going to like be prominently featured on Dr. Dre's third album when you're 34, I'd have been like, you're crazy. And now that I'm hearing it, it's just such a trip, dude. It's like so... life is so fucking cyclical, and everything comes 360. And man, I'm so happy with all the fucking content that I've created over the years with him, because it's been a lot. Like, I've made 3-4 videos, and to see what has happened, I'm just stoked, man. And so that is what that rant was about. Anyway, without further ado, we're going to talk now to another fan favorite on the show, Milo, who was the fifth guest we ever had. And this conversation was cool because I always get scared when people come in for a second conversation. I don't know what to talk to them about. And this is a surefire sign of that, because we don't really talk about anything in particular. We just get to having a fucking homie conversation, and it was cool. We talk about a lot of shit. And since he was a sprightly, wide-eyed 21-year-old about to move to LA, the last time I talked to him, now he's a grizzled vet who has since left LA and is living in Milwaukee. And things are looking up, and so I'm stoked for him. I had a good time talking to him, and I'm gonna go see him on Saturday at the Low End Theory Festival, which by the time this came out will have already happened, but hopefully I saw you guys there too. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Milo. Life's good. Life's good. So the last time that we had this encounter, mm-hmm. You are my third guest to have a second episode.
Sick. Thank you.
First was No Can. Second was our friend Penny. And the third is you. So wow. You were our fifth episode ever. And at that time, you were a fresh-faced youth with big city dreams on his mind. You were just thinking about moving out to LA, and then you ended up moving out to LA. I already had your life story from then. Up to then. So what's been happening since?
Well, since when? Since I moved to LA, or since I
You moved to LA, and mm-hmm. I was seeing you around a bit, and then what?
Right.
Yeah. Where'd you move to?
I moved to Boyle Heights.
Yeah, it's a hard neighborhood to move
yeah,
to.
Yeah, that was rough.
Yeah. What happened?
The rough times.
Boyle Heights like?
Boyle Heights is, I mean, having never left the country, it's the closest I've probably come. To a different country.
Yeah.
Straight up.
I don't even know where it's at geographically. Like, what's it next to? Highland Park?
No, it's really close to downtown.
Oh, okay.
Like right east of downtown.
Oh, okay, okay. Like, oh, so is it kind of almost like industrial in spots?
It's just beyond that. Mm. And it's not, I don't know, it isn't industrial at all. It's just, I don't want to use bad words, but I don't know. It's not that eye-pleasing, eye-catching.
Yeah. Right, it's run down.
Yeah, and like there'd be weird stuff that would happen. Like some nights you would just see guys like on the block with, you know,
particularly on warm nights, probably because the when the block is hot. The whole thing about the term "the block is hot" that's not just some kind of euphemism.
Not figurative.
Or, yeah, it's not figurative at all. It's not symbolic. It's like literally when it's hot outside, people stay out later.
Like Chance said, everybody dies in the summer.
There you go. Because it's warm out and everybody's outside.
Everybody's irritable.
Yeah, exactly.
Do the right thing.
When it's 90 degrees at 2 in the morning, you don't want to be in your house that doesn't have air conditioning.
Yeah, so we would see that kind of stuff happening a lot, and that was new for us. And then we would see other weirder stuff like...
Because you moved out with a bunch of people from Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
And so you guys are all just kind of like burb kids that come to...
Yeah, pretty much, more or less.
And then you moved to like not an easy neighborhood in Los Angeles.
I mean, I lived in not easy neighborhoods in Chicago, in Milwaukee. But yeah, not easy neighborhood in LA was way different. There's a language barrier, which was new for me.
It's mainly Hispanic area.
And then my like racial ambiguity kind of played a weird role in living in Boyle Heights.
Like, I would imagine.
This happened. We were in the parking lot of a grocery store, and a guy came up to me and was like, "I'll kill you if I ever see you here again."
At the store?
Just a random guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Why do you
Because I looked wrong or something. Huh. I don't know. Or like we would leave our home and see like people put like a couple of dead skin cats in front of our house.
That happened?
Yeah, yes, dude.
Whoa.
It was like, it was just like, man, we shouldn't live here. You know, it was like, this is bad.
I mean, like part of the big brother in me wishes that you guys would have like called and been like, "Hey, what do you think of Boyle Heights?" I'd have been like, move farther west.
That's what everybody said, but we didn't.
Well, because Los Angeles is very confusing when you first get here. Yeah. And particularly if you go to a neighborhood on a nice sunny day and you look at the house or you see it online, it could be like, oh, fuck, this place looks great.
Right.
But you're not seeing it what it looks like at night. Because a lot of the neighborhoods, regardless, here look similar. And if it's a nice sunny 72 degree day and you see the house, you're like, this neighbor looks great. And then when it's like, a fucking rainy, dreary fucking, you know.
You get it.
Yeah, and you see it, and then you, or you move in, and the cockroaches don't come out until 2 days later. You go, fuck, where did we just move?
Dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out Boyle Heights.
Yeah.
Bernal and Eagle living under the bridge.
I mean, when you first moved here, what's it like? Were you stoked?
I was so excited.
Yeah.
I thought that, I mean, you know, I guess I was going to give it like 3 months before I'd assumed we would have conquered rap. Or whatever. You know what I mean?
You thought it was just going to take 3 months, that's it?
Yeah, I know, but I'm not even, like, social.
How old were you? You were, like, 21 at the time?
No, I was 22.
22.
When I moved out here.
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah, I'm 23 now.
You're only 23?
Yeah, bro.
When do you turn 24?
February 3rd.
Oh, are you Pisces? Is that what that
is? I'm Aquarius.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah.
My mom is the 26th of February, so I just assume that, like, all February is Pisces.
No, I'm early.
Okay.
I got the Aquarius cut off.
So... That's crazy. It seems like a lot has happened in your last year and a half, I guess.
Yes.
Okay.
The skin cats was some of the most alarming. I mean, then we had the fellow who lived below us. His name was Ezra.
Mm-hmm.
And the first day we met him, he introduced himself to us with his sawed-off shotgun in his hand.
Oh, fuck.
And we were just like, dang, dude, Boyle Heights is rough.
It is interesting though your racial ambiguity. You would think in a neighborhood like that, or like you would think just kind of anywhere, that it would be helpful, because here's the thing is that you could pass as Hispanic, you could pass as Latino, you could pass as half black, you could pass like in a hipster neighborhood you would be like just the cool exotic looking dude, you know what I mean? Like it works anywhere.
Right. But then I opened my mouth.
Yeah.
And then like in Boyle Heights, what would happen is people would come up to me speaking Spanish
and then you
and I would have the look of just like
And then they're like, oh.
And then they'd be like, too late.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So you get out here and just like from the jump, it's like we're in a weird place.
Yeah, it was very strange.
What was the plan? What did you start doing?
Well, the plan was, I guess for the guys that I moved out with, one of them was still going to go to school. The other two were going to find jobs. I was making a pretty good living off of rapping. And then, you know, just as the nature of things is, plans didn't work out and money became scarce.
Yeah, one dude had to move home, right?
Right. One guy had to move home immediately.
And what happened?
Well, he just really hated Boyle Heights.
Right.
And Brandon, that's my boy who had to move home, he's a black man. So being a black man in Boyle Heights especially, he got like really antagonized by the people.
Yeah, blacks and browns in L.A. have a history.
And see, that's totally not the case where I'm from.
Right.
It's like we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
But here, in Boyle Heights, it was like, no, we don't like him.
Right.
So he really had to move back soon after. And then I don't know. Then this other internet crew of rap people, Thrax House.
Yeah,
they moved in, and then shit got like spectacular in the way that I assume only it can become in LA.
What, like, how so?
Like, just like, you know,
the turn up was too real, or
yeah,
what?
Exactly. Yeah. So like, I didn't
shout out Thrax House. I like a lot of the music that mm-hmm. they're making, but it's definitely like a different. It's a different.
Oh no, I mean, those are all my folks, but yeah. we just have totally different like approaches to life,
right?
You know, and we respect each other's, but definitely having them overlap for a while was like, whoa,
right? Mm-hmm. What kind of debauchery was going down when that happens?
I mean.
Was it just like somebody moved in and then like the couch gets filled up with randoms and shit like that?
No,
is that what
it was like somebody moved in and then they're like cold water distilling Oxy in the kitchen.
Oh.
Like that.
Okay.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Like it was just like, dang, this is how you live.
Right, right.
And really being like, you rap what you live about and you live it. And being right. able to be a rapper so close in proximity to someone else doing that. I don't know. It was interesting.
You didn't have any plans of getting a job when you're out here. You're just going to do the music stuff, yeah?
But I've been blessed, man. Like, yeah. music, really, I haven't had to work yeah. since I started rapping.
Right. Mm-hmm. Which is very rare.
Yeah.
Very based.
Very based. Thank you.
Yes. Well, yeah. So, I don't know. Tell me about LA life, then.
Okay. Well, I mean.
What'd you start doing?
I rented this lady's garage in Echo Park. And we started recording in there, and it was down the street from Exile, so I got to meet him at like a gas station, and then more and more people just started coming through my garage to record. Mike, Reagan, Sam Herring from Future Islands, all those yeah. people. And I mean, I guess I spent my time here really just working on music and then touring, and then the record came out and I didn't get paid, so with no money I could not continue to live here. And I don't have family out here or anything, so I had to move back.
Right. Well, that was a very succinct version of this. That was very.
I'm sorry. I
no,
don't
that
know.
That was brief. Okay, yeah. So here.
That's
right.
How I get down.
So you start making the music, and then what? Did you make the album out here?
No, I made the album in Chicago.
Okay,
and then
and that was a toothpaste suburb.
A toothpaste suburb.
Yeah, good memory on this.
Hey,
one.
Man,
I didn't even research that.
Hey,
so I really like the record cover of that too. It was cool. Who did the artwork?
Chris Carfalite.
Yeah, it's dope. So you made the record in Chicago and then moved to LA. It was already done.
It was
much?
Already done.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so then, what music were you working on out here?
I've been working on an album with Kenny Siegel. And that started really exactly this time last year with the first Low End Theory Festival, okay. which was when Kenny and I kind of met.
Yeah.
And then we started working on this record, and yeah, that's what I worked on when I was out here. And I also worked on a Red Wall, which is Safari Al and I.
Okay.
And I started working on a Scallops Hotel record.
Yeah, it seems like you've been pushing the Scallops Hotel record, or like, yeah. like you've been kind of doing the Scallops Hotel thing more yeah. than the Milo thing as of late. After Toothpaste
more
Suburb
publicly
came out. Right.
I've really definitely tried to orient the focus on to Scallops Hotel, but I've been doing just as much Milo music that will come out
oh,
this
no,
year.
Oh no, for certain. Like the marketing yeah. the marketing cycle is for the Scallops
Absolutely.
Hotel right now. Right?
I guess so.
Yeah. For sure. So yeah, you put out a Toothpaste Suburb and everything's all good and right. you're on a label and then what I mean, like there's gotta be more drama than I didn't
yeah.
get paid.
I mean there is.
Yeah.
There is more drama and it's still ongoing, which is even the worst. Part.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just didn't get paid, man, and you know, for whatever reason, I don't know.
Did you have control over like your Bandcamp at least or
no?
It was just
and
all
I
on...
still don't.
Oh.
And for the record, I'm still not getting paid. So Oof. You should steal that record. Ugh. Don't buy it.
That's rough. So how does that affect the personal relationships? Because
well,
that
yeah.
is a familial thing, and like I said, the first time that we did this, and it was,
exactly.
that was essentially our first time meeting, you were very excited about if like you guys had a like you, Mike, James, and
yeah.
Reagan really seemed to be like a unit, and that was doing really well in 2013 was like kind of the year of the stepping into the spotlight type thing.
I mean, I got love for everybody in Hellfire Club,
right.
you know what I mean? And like money will never be something that is that important to me at the end of the day. Mm. Ultimately, though, I just couldn't live here anymore after something like that happened. In terms of the interpersonal relationships with Hellfire Club, obviously I'm not really talking to James much. you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's rough.
I know. I'm sorry. It's
nah.
difficult. I see you're trying to like traverse it.
I don't want to throw anybody under the bus.
I know. I see it.
Because I love James.
Right.
That's a longtime friend of mine. And I don't know. I mean, my instinct as a pseudo journalist is to
right.
be like, tell me all about it. And then my instinct as a man and a friend is to be like, avoid this and run away. You right. know what I'm saying? So it's a tough thing to talk about.
I mean, yeah, I feel very similarly because I still love the idea of Hellfire Club.
Yeah.
I still love the potentials of that group.
Right.
And I still love the music that we made together.
Yeah.
So I feel similarly.
So did you have to exit the crew then? Is that what it is? Like, is it not a thing anymore? Or, like, I don't know.
It's like, man, you'd think people would want to cut the ambiguity out when something like this occurs.
But it's so hard.
But people want to just feast on it. Yeah. Like, people would rather not talk.
Right.
Or, you know, not clear it up.
Bro, I went through this.
Rap crews. I mean, everybody does.
I mean, what happened with us in 2011 with Noxsteady was like, I had to be quiet and ambiguous about it for a fucking year pretty much before, like, people were going like, hey, why aren't you uploading videos? And I would just have to ignore it until it finally became like, hey guys, there really isn't a Noxsteady anymore. And like, you guys are hanging on to something that was 2.5 years ago.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
And so like, I've started my own label now.
What's your label?
Ruby Yacht.
What's up with that?
It's great.
How do you spell that?
R-U-B-Y space Y-A-C-H-T.
Ruby Yacht.
Yep.
Okay.
Ruby Yacht.
Two words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it's great. We got the Young Distro through Alpha Pup and all that. And
nice.
It's been going great, man.
Yeah. That's good.
So you put
out the Scallops Hotel thing?
Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah. And it worked beautifully. And now we're going to do this Milo record in September.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about the release of Toothpaste Suburb. How did it feel when it came out? That was like your big amalgamation of all the work that you've been putting in.
It felt like I just made a record that was too dense, too obtuse.
When you put it out, how did you feel? Like, did it feel anticlimactic? Did you feel excited? Were you hopeful? Were you let down? Like, how did you feel?
I mean, the letdowns began kind of a little bit before it came out. So I started to get a taste of that. Yeah, of being like, whoa, this is not going to go as we planned.
Why? What happened?
You know, just stuff like when 2 weeks before the record comes out and nobody knows where, like, your CDs are.
Right.
You know, again, classic rap problems, but you're just kind of like, oh, so this isn't going to be in stores. Oh, this isn't going to be.
Oh, yeah. I want to say, like, when we talked, I kind of went like, yo, you got to, like, tone down your expectations of, like, the reality is nothing gets in stores anymore.
Yeah.
Nothing gets in stores.
Yeah.
Like, you can have as many fucking CDs sitting in your garage as you want, but getting them into a Best Buy is a whole different game and a whole nother, like, realm of the Illuminati. Like, it's like fucking, it's hard to get your stuff into stores.
Right.
You know what I mean? Even to mom and pop shops, like, selling it or like trying to sell it to mom and pop shops, like, talking on the phone, like, you're going to spend your whole fucking day cold calling shops.
I will now.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I do that now.
I feel like me personally with the physical stuff, I think that it's smooth enough to just have it in your fucking apartment and ship it to people when they want it. And it
is we hand make the tapes and all that stuff.
Exactly.
It does well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you find out that the CDs aren't there and that's like the first little letdown.
Yes. That's the first letdown.
What did you do?
I'm not a businessman, dog. I'm just a rapper.
Same.
A clumsy one.
I've tried to force myself to become a businessman because over time you realize that you have to be both.
And see, people know me too, so they know, like, Roy ain't a businessman. And I feel like that's even why this is still going on. It's just like, at the end of the day, I'm the guy who will walk away.
Mm.
You know, then blow it up.
Wow, you're so big and strong. You should flex on somebody.
I don't want to. I admire everyone in this debacle. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I look up to them and I love them. So there's no point in that.
Well, so what else happens with the release?
Okay, so then, you know, you start no music videos, no money for that. No physicals on time.
And were these all things that were promised?
Of course.
Right.
You know, there's there was pretty good press.
I think you guys got a lot of press.
Yeah.
I would say the one thing, like, did the record come out in 13 or 14?
14.
14. The 14, you guys' press cycle was big.
Right. Because
all of you put out records.
Yeah.
And like.
And mine was like the last of the four.
Yeah, but it was always the story of like, oh, these four kindred spirits of music, you know? And like, you know, oh, Mike put out this great record and Reagan put out his best record of the year and then of his career and now it's Milo's turn, you know?
Right.
And James put out a record in 14 too.
And James did.
I put out a record in 14 as well.
What up?
I made a lot of money.
Yeah, you did?
Oh, yeah.
You did.
We did good.
That's what's up.
But it's because we did it ourselves.
That's the way you get a lot
when
of
you
money.
Do, when you do it by yourself, you get a lot of money.
I'm saying when it's 85 cents on the dollar,
yeah,
it starts adding up.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like it was fully 85 cents on the dollar.
Yeah.
There was only one hand in our pocket, and that was iTunes. And
right.
That's it. And,
that's cool.
You know?
That's cool.
And we're still making good money off of it.
I mean, I live off my royalties.
That sounded very, exactly. That sounded mad douchey of me.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It sounds good, actually, because I think something that people need to stop doing is I hate all that weak pandering from like every musician I meet is like, I'm struggling to get by. Even ones who aren't. It's like they just say it. It's like part of the script.
Well, the thing is that I've been doing what we do for 15 years or for, you know, 12, 15 years basically. And this is the first time we made money off
anything.
That's
what's up.
And it's because I went, you know what? I always get fucked over.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody fucks me
Not
over,
today.
It's going to be me. That's it. Wow. I want to know that I made my own mistakes.
Yeah.
And that was such a fucking moment of clarity when it started rolling in and I went, oh, we've just been doing it wrong the whole time. You know what
Dude,
I mean?
Dude, that's so cool.
Because here's the thing is that the last time you and I met, like I said, and we haven't had a lot of, I haven't seen you that much in between, you know what I mean? So whenever it was 2 years ago or whatever, like I've only seen you maybe four or five times since. You were so bright-eyed and fresh-faced and excited about this, like,
what do I seem now?
Signing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, getting signed seemed like a big deal. And I was like, man, getting signed is never as big of a deal as you think, unless you're getting, like, a huge advance beforehand.
For me, it wasn't so much, again, the mechanism of the business to getting signed. Yeah. It was that the guys who, you know, kind of
your heroes
invented
your
the shit that I like.
Right.
Liked me, that's all.
Right.
You know, that was what was so fly to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel you. In terms of the business side, my getting signed, I was never like, oh, show.
Exactly. Yeah. But I remember like in fucking 2006 for me, I was like, wait, oh, what did you say? You're my friend and you have your own record label? Like, and you're going to put it out. I have a logo that I can put on the back of my CD. That's so awesome. And then I was like, wait, why am I paying for these CDs by myself? And why am I paying for this and that? And I was like, a label is just something stupid that doesn't really exist most of the time.
Especially now.
Yeah. Especially anybody can say they have a label.
When it's like the label is really just, you know, the website that people are buying the thing from.
Right, totally. The Bandcamp page or the
Bandcamp page.
Or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I think what the whole summary of that last segment was that I think the press cycle went great.
Thank you.
You guys had a lot. I was like, wow, James and Mike and Rory and Reagan are really getting theirs this year. Like, it's good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I thought everything was going smooth. So then what is the next letdown for you?
I mean, the next letdown for me is just, right, so there's problems.
Yeah.
And then the next letdown is watching those problems. Instead of, like, man, we should work to fix these things together, it became a lot of just stress, man, and compounded stress, and stuff gets carried away, and you know, people start yelling, and months go past, and it's hard to remember exact sums of money or whatever.
Right.
And then, you know, you're just looking at a really messy situation that doesn't have any kind of clear answer or even, you know, necessarily a bad guy.
Right.
Yeah.
The one thing that I thought was shocking about the release.
What up?
Was.
What up, Papa?
The Fantano review.
I mean, I want to say this about that.
Yeah.
I think that he did not want to understand the record.
Okay. Let's talk about it. Here's the thing. I want to, like, full transparency. I have a huge, I've always had a huge hate relationship with record reviewers.
Okay.
With record reviewers. Not to say, dude, I think Fantano is great at his job and I trust his opinion on very many things, but I know what it feels like to get a bad review. And sometimes I just want to like get on a pedestal and go, hey, you didn't fucking understand what I was trying to do.
Right.
And this is what you got wrong. And you didn't even type this lyric right that you said you didn't like. And so that's why you didn't like it. And like, da, 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 da.
Well, I mean, Arthur Danto talks about, he's like a famous New York Times art critic. He talks about negative criticism is only ever cruel, especially from like a revered critic.
Right. Because it's so subjective.
Right. It is very subjective. And I mean, when you're on a platform like that, I don't know. It's whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, ultimately, well, the review made itself beside the point, I guess I would say. From the first moment, he didn't know, like, the first song had a cover of We Will Not Tolerate. And I think he said something like, these lyrics seem very reactionary to Ferguson. They're not that good or whatever. And it's like, man, this song I'm covering is, like, 25 years old.
Right.
And so once, you know, just those kind of category mistakes are made, and you're kind of like, you reviewed this with a misunderstanding.
Right, of what it is.
I don't know. It's cool, though.
I've never heard that thing, the quote that you just said, but yeah, negative reviews always just seem like, why even review it?
Exactly.
Like, just leave it alone, then.
Because at best, you're just going to embarrass this person.
Right. Right.
At best, you're just going to embarrass this person.
And the thing is that you caught a lot of buzz initially with his help.
Yeah, and that was weird too, is because then, I mean, you know how the internet is. Yeah. People who knew that then immediately are like,
oh, they hate each other.
Y'all got beef. Yeah, huh? And we don't have beef or anything. It was just like, man, I sent you the record a long time ago. I thought you would have listened closer. You didn't. It's not a big deal, whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
He didn't review mine and I sent it to him. I had him on
He didn't review Scallop.
I had him on the show hoping like, oh, hey, now that I know you. Maybe you'll review my record. So I send him the last record.
Right.
As I'm seeing you guys get press, I went, man, this is fucking bullshit. Like, how come nobody gives me any press?
Yeah.
I do the same fucking thing these guys
do. I know what you mean.
You know what I mean? I was like, this is some bullshit. But I have to remind myself when I'm having those thoughts to go, no, be happy for the homies.
Right. Be happy for the homies.
Like, what's wrong with you? Why are you thinking this way? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, don't think that way. What you have is good. Mm-hmm. It's just different. That's what I have to think, you know?
Right.
But I also, for some reason, people think that I am some source of advice sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I get messages from people asking me for advice, or like friends will text
me. I mean, your music,
me.
Man.
Yeah. People think that I'm far more wise than I actually am. So I get asked for advice a lot. And a lot of the advice that I end up giving is just like, yo, do you hear when I'm talking to you and giving you, or like talking about ideas, maybe you're always like, not you, the hypothetical you. They're
the
always
ethical dative.
Yeah, they're always going like, well, yeah, but well, I can't because, and I'm like, as soon as you're brainstorming with somebody and you go, well, but that won't work because of it, it's like you're already killing the idea and being negative. And you have to just fucking, it's as cliche as it is, you got to lead with yes.
You know what? I made a record with my best friend Alex as Redwall.
Yeah.
And that was really where it started to hit me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never made beats with anyone else before. And kind of what you're talking about. A lot of stuff, I would bring an idea up and just force a habit, that kind of self-effacing thing. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
And you realize, like, yo, this is just derailing the creative process.
Right.
This bizarre habit I've acquired, I should lose it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you're working on that.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Does it feel better when you feel yourself being positive?
It feels way better. I mean, not so much that I'm being positive, but like, I just think in 2015, it is expected of you to kind of tell me that you're like awkward, that you're kind of ambivalent about how your talents are or whatever. I just feel like everyone kind of comes with that now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like it.
Well, it's like there's also a sense of forced humility, I think. Mm-hmm. Like everyone has to pretend that they're humble or something.
Okay,
But keep it a fucking 100. If you were really that humble, you wouldn't be making art and showing it to people. Everybody talks about like, oh man, he makes such real art. And it's like so selfless. And it's like, motherfucker, if it was selfless, he'd be doing it by himself and never showing anyone.
At a farmer's
because
market.
That's the only, yeah, exactly. No, not even at a farmer's market. He would just, like, you know, any artist that talks about like, oh, I just do it for the love. If you were doing it strictly for the love, no one would know that you made it.
You know what's interesting?
No one would know you made it.
You know Zero?
Yeah.
He's like that. He inspires me so much.
He is like that.
When I talked to him, he was like, I got 13 hours of unreleased music.
Yeah, that he doesn't show anymore.
He's like, I just like knowing I have it. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you talk to him, you can really get that sense of that sense of him is that like he just truly loves to make it.
Just loves to make.
But we're fucking rappers. We're egotistical as shit and we feel like we have something to say. Even if you're even the most humble rapper, he's on a track telling you how fucking humble he is. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
I'm a big one for that.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah.
You do that?
I used to.
What?
But, you know,
talk about how
I'm the humblest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know.
I mean, that's the irony is thick.
Right.
Yeah. So toothpaste comes out, and how long does the press cycle go on? Like, did you baby it? Like, were you excited about it?
I don't baby anything.
Yeah.
I don't think I do.
So it's just on to the next.
On to the next, always.
Yeah.
With that one, I toured for a couple months with a bus driver.
How was it?
I mean, it was weird because, again, the label didn't make any physicals. So I'm on tour for this record with
no physicals.
No nothing.
Yeah. And you didn't have, like, money to press them yourself.
And, dude, like, the label had sold 250 pre-orders, never sent them out. So kids are coming to the shows, and I'm literally paying kids out of my pocket because they're like, you know, $50 is a lot of money to give a guy and wait 3 months and never get anything. And you're like,
what was in the pre-order?
Dude, it was so fly. It was, like, some custom mittens. The scarf, this pin, the CD or the cassette poster. It was dope.
Yeah. That's rough. So you're paying people back.
I'm paying them back. And I still am paying them back.
Ugh.
I mean, that's, yeah.
So physicals never came.
Yeah, I don't know what happened with that.
Oh, man. Was there supposed to be?
I mean, eventually they came.
Didn't you press vinyl?
Oh, well, that was the thing. My boy Chesky at Fake Four did me the wonderful favor of handling vinyl through his connect. So yeah, vinyl was made, but it was nice. Through a totally different channel, and that's right. Why it succeeded. That's why it happened.
Right.
Yeah.
So how long after A Toothpaste Suburb comes out is it that you leave Los Angeles?
Well, what record came out on the 9, I moved on the 1. So I guess
a month?
3 months,
oh,
4 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, September. I moved in January.
Yeah. What was it like leading up to the move? Like, could you feel yourself starting to despise Los Angeles or just thought like, oh, I don't fit here? Or was it like, I'm just running out of money and that's all there is?
Yes to all. And then what I realized was, again, you know, there's like an ancient story about a guy who leaves his town and walks up to this old guy in front of a different town. He's like, man, I need to move to a new city. Da 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 da. What are the people like here? And the guy's like, well, what are the people like where you come from? He's like, well, where I come from, everyone's shitty and mean and they steal from each other and it sucks and I gotta leave. And the guy's like, oh, everybody here is just like that. Keep moving.
Yeah.
And then another guy comes, he's like, can I move to this city? Da da da. He's like, well, what are the people like where you come from?
I love them. They're so great.
Right. And he's like, oh, then move here. They're just like that.
Oh.
And so it was kind of like that for me with LA, you know?
I mean, dude, that also ties into the like
exactly.
Positive versus negative
positive
thinking.
Positive versus negative thinking. Exactly.
People want to be around positive people.
This place sucked for me because I made it suck for me.
Yeah.
And I wasn't even aware of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a revelation, though.
I'm in a comfy place now. I'm home again, you know, so I'm able to reflect on this stuff and grow.
Right. So where did you move back to?
I moved to Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Back in with dad?
No. I moved into one of my boys had an art studio in a factory where they make yachts, ironically enough.
Oh, so that's where Ruby Yacht comes from.
No, I had the name beforehand, but this just kind of fell in my lap. And so I just was sleeping on his futon in a factory for a couple months. I got an apartment.
How was that?
It was great because he it's like an artist colony. So I'm like next.
There's a lot of those in LA too.
See, no one ever showed me any of them. Yeah. I didn't find them. You know how it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
You have to be here
for a while before you start tapping into like the super underground things like that.
Well, what's tough was like I had the responsibility of my friends. I'm making money as a rapper, which is good, but not enough to like really support more than myself.
Right.
None of us have family out here, so we just had to move.
You
back.
Were kind of the catalyst for everybody moving. Like,
yeah,
you were the spoon that stirred the pot.
I talked all these people into it.
Right.
And
so when you're the leader, and then it's like, oh, well, he's giving up.
Right.
Like, I guess. So did everybody move when you moved?
Everybody moved back.
Yeah.
But, I mean, one of the homies, Braden, Ned Arb Nagram, he moved back to LA.
I just saw him. Does he have a face tattoo now?
I don't know.
I think he has a face tattoo.
Wow.
I said, damn, Braden. The game got
Does
really
he rough. Have one?
I don't know. So somebody was like, hey, I think he got a heart tattooed on his face. I said, God damn, no shit. Maybe he doesn't. Shout out to Braden, though. I like Braden.
What up, Braden?
He's a good dude. Braden used to hit me up all the time before I really even knew who you were, going like, hey, I want him to come out and intern. And I was like, dude, you're hungry. That's great.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah, so you're living on a...
I was.
You're living there, and then how do you get your own apartment? You start making some money in Milwaukee?
Oh, yeah, I mean...
Did you get a job?
No.
Okay, you never had to have a
job? No. I bought like a bunch of tape dubbers.
Oh, yeah.
I started building racks. I started dubbing my own tape.
Oh, we had a Twitter argument about tapes. So I was going to bring it up.
I mean, you could argue with my bank account, player.
Hey, I'm down. Like I said, I'm happy when the homies are getting money, period.
Right.
Now, I clowned on tapes.
Uh-huh.
And you were like, I don't understand what's wrong with tapes. I said, I think they're gimmicky.
Okay. What's the gimmick?
So the gimmick is... No one has tape players anymore, so it's really hard to listen to them.
I object.
Okay, how do you find tape players now? In thrift stores?
No, everyone I know has tape players.
Where do they get them?
In our broke ass hoopties, bro.
Oh.
College kids have shitty cars, man.
Oh, okay.
And that's why I made them.
See, I'm such a dad. I have my car just has Bluetooth.
I'm target audience, man.
You feel me?
I know what my folks need.
Well, because here's my other thing about tapes, and please feel free to tweet at us at Kinda Neat or and tag Milo at Milo in the
at Yo Milo
in these Twitter conversations. But the reason that I think tapes are a bit gimmicky is because like I grew up. Really in the tape era.
Right.
I'm a good fucking 13 years older than you. I'm a few, like 11 years older than you. I'm not trying to age myself too much. But, you know, when I was a kid, mm-hmm. CDs weren't out yet. CDs came out with a big bang when I was in fourth grade.
Okay.
So I grew up with tapes, and fucking tapes sucked. And like they got shittier sound as the time went on. And I guess some people will go, oh, well, that's like just the soul of the tape, man.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's where the art is. And I'm like, why? Why can't you just make something that sounds cool every time it sounds the same?
I mean, you can on your computer.
So yeah, well, on your computer, I guess. But that's the thing is that like when like CDs came out and it was like, oh yeah, fucking tapes really suck and CDs are so superior. That's how I really felt about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I looked back as like it was a shitty technology then, and it's a gimmicky technology now.
But now, I mean, CDs are truly devalued.
CDs are like
CDs are actually useless.
They are useless.
I would interest you to redirect your scorn.
Oh, no. Now, I understand that CDs are completely, like, useless, and the mm-hmm. only thing they're good for is to sign at shows.
Yeah.
And for people that like to have something to hold on to. And, yeah, you're right. Like, vinyl is much more valuable of a tool now than CDs are,
mm-hmm.
I would say, because even in the car, no one listens to CDs anymore.
I think tapes aren't gimmicky. I think that tapes are really cool because they cost, what, 80 cents a pop, blank?
Sure. I don't know.
I just mean there's...
Where do you find them?
Everywhere. Deltamedia.com.
Okay.
Cassette.ca.
Okay.
There's a few places.
So you order them in bulk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Like a guy like, you know, Safari Al, for example.
Yeah.
He can order 25 tapes, dub them himself, mm-hmm. paint on them, you know, customize the J card, et cetera, sell them for $10 a pop. And you're buying more than just a physical. Let's be real. Any physical right now is sort of beside the point.
Mm-hmm.
So why not do a tape?
Right.
I guess.
I get it. I mean, I understand the point of like it's a fully customizable thing that you get, like they're ordering it and it's got your fingerprints all over it, right? I guess it was just like there was a time, and we're a little past that time now.
Where?
Because there was even a time in the like before the 2010s, like in the MySpace era, where people like started selling tapes, and it just became the like if you had a tape, you were automatically like, oh, look at how cool and hip my music is because I have a tape.
Right.
I'm too cool to put my stuff on CDs.
Right.
I put it on tapes. And that's been going on for like a good decade now.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I was like, oh, artists that do that, the tape is their gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of the times people can't even fucking listen to the goddamn tape.
I mean, that's real. Yeah. People tell me that all the time. They'll be like, oh, I bought this. I don't even have a tape player.
Right, right.
I mean.
And you can still listen to it online.
Look, man. I'm writing the songs, dedicating my life to the craft.
Right.
If you don't have a player, that's cool with me. I appreciate you buying it.
Right.
So Kev blessed me with the opportunity to start my own label.
Ruby Yacht.
Right.
Where does that name come
distribution.
From?
Have you ever read, it's a book of poetry called The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam.
Nope.
So Rubaiyat is Persian for like a collection of poems.
Okay.
So Ruby Yacht is just
Sounds similar.
Yeah, play on words.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've just been learning, man, and like getting an LLC and learning like about taxes.
I need to do that.
And,
I'm
like,
so lazy.
Writing contracts for my homies and shit like that. Just learning, and then really preparing for the rest of the year and the next year to be making and releasing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So have you been making still?
I've been making a lot. So we started a zine called Obruxo.
What's that come from?
It just means the wizard.
Okay. In what language?
Italian.
Oh, sick.
Yeah.
I'm half Italian.
There you go.
Yeah.
Obruxo.
Yeah. Swag.
Swag.
And what is the zine about?
It's a rap zine. There's none of them. There's no rap zines.
True.
So I wanted to make one. So it's got like 8 authors right now. The first issue did.
Well, what 32 kind of rap?
Pages.
Hmm? What kind of rap?
I mean rap.
Like is Young Thug in there? Why not?
Well, there's a piece about hip-hop and character assassination as it relates to Michael Brown and Ferguson by a rapper named Crash Prez from Madison, Wisconsin, who just graduated for journalism.
Mm.
So there's some interesting pieces like that in there. I don't know if Young Thug makes an appearance.
That is Future
We're smoking penises.
Is Future in there?
I'm not Future Hive.
Man, you're the second person in a row that's not Future Hive. I love him. I love Future.
It's not that I'm... I should say I just don't bump it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm still bumping what the are same you bumping? Stuff. Well, okay. In rap or just period?
Just in general.
I'm listening to Leon Thomas so much.
Who's that?
Leon Thomas is like a jazz yodeler.
Wow. That literally sounds like a genre I would make up.
It's so good.
People go, oh, what kind of music do you make? They're like, I go, oh, I'm a musician. People go, oh, what kind of, what do you play? They go, what do you play? I go, ah, I don't play. They're like, what do you do? I say, well, it's avant-garde polka. And they're like, right. What? Hmm? And I'm like, yeah, I'm an avant-garde polka player.
Some jazz yodel.
Yeah, so jazz yodel, that sounds like such a made-up genre.
Well, have you heard of Pharoah Sanders?
No.
Okay, so spiritual jazz. Uh-huh. And then kind of an offshoot became like,
yodeling.
You know, when the Holy Ghost gets you, you just start, you know, all that kind of stuff. And they just go ham.
You ever listen to old Jimmy Rogers? Do you know Jimmy Rogers?
I don't know Jimmy Rogers.
Miss the Mississippi and you. He's the, like, the OG fucking, a yodeling.
Oh, okay. That's okay. Okay. Yeah, I don't know him.
Yeah. Jimmy Rogers is tight.
Leon Thomas is like, again, he's got a lot of soul with it.
Yeah.
And his songs are like, they have a song called The Creator Has a Master Plan.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, the Creator has a master plan. Peace and happiness for every man.
Yeah.
And then like, dun, dun, dun. And you're just oh my God, you're just feeling it.
I'm not a fan of videotaped podcasts, but that is like the one moment that I wish we had a video camera in here, because you're dancing. You were like hula-ing at first, and then the yodel came in, and right. you really caught the Holy Ghost.
I love that stuff. I listen to it a lot. Listen to Leon Thomas, Pharoah Sanders, Sun Ra, and I mean the usual suspects.
Yeah,
Open Mike Eagle.
Yeah,
Serengeti. Uh-huh. You hear that new song he put on SoundCloud?
No,
Dust. You ever heard Dust?
No, I'll go home and look it.
Do you like our motel, baby? This is for us. Let me lick your perfume.
I'm a huge Getty fan. I think he makes some of the most beautifully mundane rap songs.
Oh,
like
definitely.
When I say beautifully mundane, I mean he can talk about the mundane and make it beautiful. Like, oh, we used to lay in bed and pluck each other's chest hairs and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, damn, that is like so trill.
Get a puppy, name him Benjamin.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Dude.
Like, oh, we built a beautiful deck. I'm like, whoa. No, I love Getty. And
that song.
We text and we're always trying to link up, and it's always like clashing schedules
right.
When he's here. It sucks.
Getty's fly. I kind of want to write a book about him.
He is a very interesting character.
Because he's like a traveler.
I've been begging him to have him on this show because I don't really know what I would learn, and I don't know how much of it would be real.
Right, true.
Because he's so good at making up worlds that I feel like he could lie to me for an hour and I would believe everything he said.
It's interesting, man.
You
should let me do a gorilla episode.
You go for it.
Because one time, he drove me around Chicago once,
and
it was what you're talking about. We're like driving down Western, and he's going in and out of like the Kenny Dennis voice.
Yeah.
Just like spinning lore.
Well, so in 11, when I was doing the Knox City shit, I had him on because he had just put out his first record. And
I heard it.
Oh, yeah, duh. Yeah, you knew that.
Love. So, wonderful love.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was my whole thing. I was like, I want to do like a little portion where I just interview Kenny Dennis. And it was like, I died. It was so hilarious. It was so funny.
Yeah, man.
That's funny that you heard that whole podcast. I was terrible at it back then, but
I disagree.
I was learning.
I remember watching that and being like, okay, so that's what
you watched it live?
I watched the video
of
it, and then I listened to the SoundCloud post.
Because we streamed them. We used to stream them back then. So all of that was like, the podcast that you heard was like actually people were tuned in watching that.
Oh, that's sick. I didn't know
which
that.
Was a lot of added pressure because I couldn't say some dumb shit.
And then back up.
Yeah. I couldn't make some like cultural faux pas and then be like, hey, Ben, edit that
Snatch
out.
Snatch that out,
yeah,
please.
No, because it's like people were watching. So
yeah, the Donald Trump it.
Yeah,
stand by the weirdness.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, what's going on with the GOP?
We were bumping that debate on the drive here, and it was...
Oh, on AM radio or something?
Yeah.
Oh, how was it?
It was so...
That's weird.
You know what was weird was you could tell no one has a criteria anymore to reliably gauge a leader.
Yeah.
And you're listening to this debate, and they're like, oh, yeah, they're fighting, and da-da-da-da-da. Or like, Jeb Bush looked weak when he let Donald Trump yell at him. And you're like, well, none of that should
matter at all.
Right. You're like, what is
going
on?
Yeah, like, oh, cool, like, you're a yeller, but like, what are you going to do about poverty in America?
Or it's
what
you know, horrifying. Yeah.
How are you going to end all this fucking police terrorism?
No one talked about that.
Oh, of course. The GOP is not going to talk about police violence.
I mean, there's a black guy on stage, Ben Carson. I thought maybe he would have.
No.
Nope.
Nope.
I mean, once you're GOP, you're Cylon.
What is happening in our country with that stuff?
It alarms me.
It's terrifying.
I don't know if it's always been this alarming, though. That's my worry.
I feel it's just become more vocally terrifying because now everyone has... This is the first generation that everyone has a camera in their pocket.
Well, I feel like people aren't fronting anymore. Like, in terms of the debate that I heard today, they weren't even pretending to be talking about other stuff or, like, pretending to not be racist. Like, there's a part where Donald Trump was like, this country doesn't have time to be politically correct. And Megan, she asked him, like, why do you hate women, basically? And he was just like, what kind of question is that? Of course I hate women. Da-da-da-da. You know what I mean? Like,
he said that?
No.
Not in so many words.
But his response is so vulgar, so aggressive, and did nothing. Like, he didn't, like, you know, deny the fact. He wasn't like, oh, I spoke incorrectly. Nothing. He was like, yes, I'm full on crazy. I say these things. I don't like these people. And now he's like the number one.
Yeah, well,
that's what
that.
I mean. Like, he's very popular.
He's popular because of that. And it's funny because I say this every other fucking episode. Whenever I talk about the social things that are happening right now as far as like police brutality, as far as the country being hyper fucking sensitive to racism, and you know, and finally like people of color are so outspoken on social media and they're having a platform now, you know what I mean, to where like shit is not getting tolerated, like, oh, like, you know what I mean, like you can't say some dumb white people shit and not feel the backlash from it. And the last time that it felt like this was in like 92 before the LA riots cracked off, right? And you know who was running for president in 92 during the riots? Ross Perot.
Okay.
And you know what Ross Perot was? A loud, outspoken, independent, quote fingers, but actually conservative fucking businessman like Donald Trump. He was a fucking multi-millionaire or billionaire or whatever who just would like speak whatever his crazy mind wanted to speak. And he was very popular because of it at the time.
It grosses me out.
And it's like a full-on 30-year cycle or 20-year cycle where that's happening. You know what I mean? Like, because it seems the climate right now is just like it was in 92, I feel like.
It's bizarre.
Yeah.
And I mean, the problems that are like facing us right now are kind of huge.
Yeah, totally.
Terrifying ones, man, like climate change. I mean, stuff beyond like police brutality. Like,
the climate change shit is so crazy. I cannot believe there are people going like, it's not getting warm, look at, there's snow on that mountain.
It's horrible,
dude. And people go, oh, the Ted Cruz, the science doesn't back it up, the science isn't there. There are, out of 10,850 studies on climate change caused by man-made pollution or whatever, there were only three that came out that out of those 10,000 that said, oh no, I don't think that that's what it is. You know what I mean? So it's like, cool, if you're gonna pick one of those three out of 10,000, then I guess science is backing you. But come on, it's crazy.
And then like on the debate, a big thing was like building this wall
around Mexico.
But it's like
so stupid.
It's like, we have the internet. You can't make a physical boundary now.
What is this, West Germany all of a sudden?
Exactly. It's like, dude, we're one people now.
That's the craziest shit.
I mean, like,
the craziest shit, like, the GOP, you know, outright worships fucking Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's their
dude.
Yeah, their philosophical leader. Oh, Reaganism. Reagan did this. Trickle-down economics. Reagan's most famous quote, tear down this wall.
Mr. Gorbachev.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
They want to build one.
And now they want to build one around Mexico.
A big one.
How fucking crazy is this, man?
It was wild.
Yeah.
It makes me sad.
I have no idea what this interview is about, but
I'm sorry.
This conversation. I like it.
We're going all over.
I like this shit.
Me too.
Yeah. So what? Are you still reading a lot of philosophy? That's what you were doing last time too. You were still in school.
I read a lot. I don't know if I'm reading as much philosophy anymore. I've been reading a lot of Heidegger, I guess, for philosophy stuff. This book called What Is Called Thinking, where he talks about poetry being a bridge to true thought.
Mm-hmm.
That interested me a lot. Right now I've been reading Think and Grow Rich.
Mm.
But there's one by a guy named Dennis Kimbrough specifically for black people called Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice.
Mm.
It's interesting. It's like the first self-help book I've ever read.
I went through a self-help phase.
Yeah, you're like, you just read it and you're like, I am powerful. Yeah. I am good.
Actually, you know who, I think, I'm pretty sure who gave me Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
What is that?
Oh, you haven't read Rich Dad, Poor Dad?
Is that the new Migos album?
Yeah. Yes.
What is that?
Young, Rich, and Poor Dad. Rich Dad, Poor Dad is like a... Well, first, let me tell you who gave it to me. It was James, I think.
Oh, okay.
I think James gave me that book, I think.
That's cool.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad basically talks about like your upbringing and how if you grow up in a wealthy family, you grow up learning how to make money work for you. And if you grow up in a working class or lower income family, then you learn, go to school, get a job, work for the man.
Right.
And if you grow up wealthy with a rich dad, they go – oh, go to school and then make yourself a business and make the money work for you and hire people and you be the boss. You know what I mean? And it's like really like a socioeconomic like difference. And so anyway, it's another self-help book that maybe you'd want to read. Maybe you won't. I don't know. But it's one of the most popular self-help books.
I got the in-between. Rich Dad, Hustler Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah. Having a hustler dad's probably fucking pretty tight.
Because you're just learning.
Yeah. Well, and you hustle now.
Right.
Hustling them types.
Hustling them.
You feel me?
Them types,
bruh. Hustling them types.
Them types. Got the internet going nuts.
Crawl similar to an ant because I'm low to the earth. What's life like in Milwaukee now? What's the day-to-day?
It's
you have your own apartment?
Yeah. So it's interesting, man. Like, I feel like I've taken the last 2 years since I've dropped out of school to learn how an artist would live their life, you know, in terms of a day-to-day schedule and making it
a job for yourself?
Yeah, you know, like making inspiration something that's under your control and you're not under its control. Having deadlines to do musical things. Now that I'm making beats especially, like beat deadlines. So I guess I'm just working on music a lot.
Are your beats, forgive me for like...
No.
I don't listen to that many of the homies' music too
much. No, I'm not offended.
Okay, but are your beats mainly sample-based? Or do you use a lot of like your own MIDI synths?
I got many styles.
Okay.
Kind of depends.
Are beats easier to finish than raps?
No.
No?
No. No, they're harder.
Is it because they never feel finished?
I like making beats because I know I'm not as good at it as I am at rapping.
So you're getting to relearn.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like learning new things too.
I've been playing the bass.
Nice.
Mm-hmm.
How's that going?
It's going great.
You ever see the old South Park episode where they're like, nah, man, you can play bass, you're black. And he's like, fuck you, that's racist. Then he picks up the bass and can play, and he's like, god damn it.
I mean, that's kind of what, yeah.
Yeah.
You're just feeling it.
Yeah, feeling you just go out for it.
I love it, dude.
Really?
I want to.
You got pedals and shit?
Yes, I do, of course.
Nice.
But for the most part, I'm just using the 404, 555 to make beats.
Yeah, and then what, plugging into Pro Tools?
No, I use a machine and then a PreSonus Studio One.
Okay. Swag.
Swag, swag.
And so what's the – since releasing your big, you know, studio release, your big album or your big label album, like what has changed in your music making process now? Like what are you going to change the next time around other than putting it out on Ruby Yacht?
Well, like the next Milo record, I recorded it in a professional studio. I recorded with Kenny and then I recorded some here.
Yeah.
And I mean for the next Milo thing, none of it went through my computer.
Yeah. Oh, really?
That's the major change.
It's all analog? Or you just mean it went through other computers other than your own?
Yeah, it went through like professional soundboards. It started on them and went through them.
Right. So your voice is going to sound extra sexy on this.
It does. Nice. Yeah. That's like the first thing my dad said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said, son, your voice is extra sexy.
He was like, bruh. Sounds like it's for the radio.
That's funny.
That's what my dad said.
That's really funny.
That was tight.
That's tight. Mm-hmm. My dad would be like, I don't understand. I hate this music. Thanks, Dad.
Dang.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
And so you're not having to mix or master anything. Like you're a little more, you're just involved in the creative. You don't have to do the technical stuff.
Yes.
And does that feel like relief?
I love it. Because now I'm increasing the output.
Right.
You know, because it's a team. That's what you learn is you need to assemble your team.
Right.
And then, you know, it's an assembly.
Yeah. When I first met you, you were admittedly new to the game. Like you had only been rapping like, I think 2 years, something like that.
Yes.
Two, 3 years, right?
Yeah.
And so that was 2.5 years ago, 2 years ago. And so in those 2 years, have you felt your style changing?
Definitely.
How so?
I mean, I tour so much, man.
Yeah.
And that's really why it changes.
Right.
Because I probably do, I don't know, somewhere between 150, 200 shows a year.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm just finding new styles a lot of the times. And I mean, I'm spitting the same old songs, but I start doing them in new ways. And
yeah.
It kind of like bursts.
You get to workshop them.
That's what's going on.
Sometimes when you perform a song in a new way, don't you go, God damn it, I should have recorded it this way.
You're like, but if this was the way y'all first heard it, it would have been on.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Are you ashamed of any of your old records? And I ask that as a loaded question. It's a projection of my own shit because I'm like, I hate my first record.
That's a fantastic question. Yeah, yeah. I talked to Buck 65 about this.
Yeah.
I went to him for advice because I hated A Toothpaste Suburb after I put it out.
Really?
Yeah.
But do you think it was more of just like the
people made me turn on it.
For it?
Not even that, but just really the music. Listening to my own voice on it, I was like, this is not my good stuff. Yeah. I definitely feel that way about everything I've made. I don't like any of my old stuff.
That's great.
I'm the kind of dude who's like, but bruh, the next one, you know?
Well, that's my main problem. I don't hate my last record yet. I can never start making shit again until I hate my last record.
I start hating them before they're even out.
Right.
And it's because I listen to them a lot. I listen to my own music a lot.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to find the stuff.
Right.
Totally. Trying to develop it.
Totally. I get that. Like, people get in the car and they go, oh, you're listening to your own music? And I say, hey, man. Let me grow to hate this. All right?
Let me do my thing.
Yeah, I'm trying to see what I can
Mike
do.
Mike showed me that. He was the first dude I knew who I admired who was like, yeah, I listen to only me.
Yeah, oh, dude.
I was like, whoa.
That's the other thing is like, I'm in a full on, like, I'm listening to a lot of new music. I'm like staying very involved in like what's happening in rap and I'm listening to a lot of shit. And so, but yeah, when I'm in like full on album creative mode, there will be a 2 or 3 year period where I don't hear anything other than beats or demos of mine.
Right.
Like that's all I roll around listening to is like beats so I can sit there and rap to them in the car or fucking demos to see like what do I need to change.
Wow.
Or what needs to be added to this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I listen to a lot of like I don't know, there's a weird old hip hop blog spot that I follow.
What is it?
I listen to whatever they post.
Is it a very secretive
No, it's called Beat Back. BEETBAK.
What do they post?
Like, you know, the nonce.
Oh.
Stuff like that.
Oh, you
that.
Mean music I used to tell you to listen to?
When
I first met you, you're like, oh, I only listen to my homies. I said, hey, man, that's cool, but you need to be a student of the game. And you need to learn.
You need to be a student. I am now.
That's what I told
I've
you.
Grown into
I said, hey, you need to fucking listen to the classics.
Thank you.
Because you didn't grow up listening to them. Because you told me you didn't grow up listening.
I didn't.
Yeah. The nonce is fucking great.
Yo, I've been listening to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
All that stuff.
Yeah. A little, some old Boots Riley, maybe.
Dude, I've been listening to Zagu Brown.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've been Boots Riley, the Coop.
Yeah, the Coop.
I already knew them.
Okay.
Fat Cat's a Bigger Fish.
Okay.
What else have I been listening to? Anti-Pop Consortium all the time.
There was a few Anti-Pop Consortium songs that I was into. I never got
My Little
Overpad
Indivisible by the Sum of Three.
Yeah, they had one with Pharoah Monch that I really
Oh, whoa.
Liked. They have a song with Pharoah Monch that's like amazing. Speaking of which, oh dude, if you perked up when I said Pharoah Monch. Have you ever gone back and listened to, what was his old group? Have you ever listened to Organized Confusion?
No.
Oh, bruh.
Bruh.
Talk about early styling. Like,
really?
They were straight styling.
What's the name of the record?
You got to get Stress, the Extinction Agenda.
Oh, I like that title a lot.
Stress, the : the Extinction Agenda.
You know what I liked about
Organized
rap
Confusion
from yesteryear? Yeah. Is there was way more talking about that kind of stuff, like recognize thresholds of negative stress, just being like the life.
They literally have a song called Crush, Kill, Destroy, Stress, Crush, Kill, Destroy, Stress. Organized Confusion is amazing, and that record came out in 94. They put out a record in 91, then they had a record in 94, but that record in 94, you hear that one, and contextually, it's the same time that Biggie was dropping. It's the same time that Raekwon was dropping. It's the same, you know, like Tupac was dropping, right? But this was the indie alternative, or the underground alternative. But it sounds like shit that would have been, this sounds like, in hindsight, this doesn't sound like a big jump, but this sounds like something that would have been put out in 98 or 99.
Okay.
Not 94.
Right.
But you have to remember is that at that time, rap was advancing so fucking fast because it was so young that like the difference between 94 and 98 was like leaps and bounds stylistically and just like what was popular. So this sounds more like something that would have come out much later. It was very ahead of its time. Wow. And there's a verse on there that is like maybe the most styly fucking Pharaoh Monch song that you ever heard.
I need to get it.
Yeah, you should. It's great.
I'll bump it tonight.
It's great. It's great. Oh, Reagan's text. Read it again.
Oh, okay. I mean, Reagan texts are great because they're
Reagan's
all,
tweets are also great.
They're literary.
Reagan is bus driver for those of you who are not informed.
Tomorrow I will summon you at the crack of dawn to perform your spells in my childhood stomping grounds.
Everything he says is so poetic. Reagan is like scarily genius to
he's
me.
He's a lovely man.
He's so intimidating to be around, I feel I like, love because him. I feel like he's so much smarter than everyone.
I feel that way too. That's why I like being around him.
Yeah.
Because at least it's like... Yeah. You know, you're like, wow.
See, my ego just makes me scared of coming off like an idiot.
I'm just like, man, I hope I can soak something up.
Right, right.
Put me on the game.
See, that's positive. That's positive thinking right there.
I mean, Reagan is like the archetype.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
For a guy like me, I mean.
Right. With how he flips and styles so much, mm-hmm. you're an even keel pace on the track, right?
I've been known to be.
So what, like, do you think that you'll branch off and do more like crazy styles and scatting and yada yada?
This Kenny Siegel record
has a lot of that.
It's called So the Flies Don't Come.
Right.
It's still got a lot of that.
Okay.
I would say it's like definitely me leaving my like kind of style behind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this, you flipped it.
I flipped it.
Sick, man.
It might be.
I'm excited to hear it. I think we accomplished what we set out to do.
Thank you. Yeah. I think so, too.
Yeah. This is great. I like when I get frightened when I'm having a second-time guest on because I feel like I cover so much in the first mm-hmm. episode. And I'm like, oh, no, I can't ask him about his childhood because I've already done that. What do I talk about now?
I thought it went great.
This was very fun, man. And this just felt like a conversation between friends and I like that.
Because it is.
Yeah, and that's appreciative. Or I'm appreciative of that. So remind everyone where they can find you online.
You can find me online at miloraps.com.
Miloraps.com.
At YoMilo on Twitter.
YoMilo.
Yes. Or at Scallops Hotel.
At Scallops Hotel.
If you want my shadow man.
What is, yeah, that's your beat alias?
That's my shadow man.
Yeah.
It's not just the beat alias.
Did you rap on it too?
I rap on it too.
Okay.
I talk shit on it as Scallops. It's the shadow man. It's really just like.
That's your internet troll rap guy.
Not even. That's like really more me.
Okay.
I would say Milo is more an internet construct. Scallops Hotel is more, I'm prone to talking shit.
You get to tap into your id?
Kind of.
This is a little philosophy for you. No, that's psychology. Whatever.
Freudian.
They are both OGs.
Right.
OGYs. Where else?
iTunes.
iTunes, search for Milo.
Milo Scallops Hotel.
Where are they going to be putting money in your pocket? Milo Raps?
MiloRaps.com. I mean, really any of my music now is putting money in my pocket.
Fantastic.
So thank you.
Well, shit, man. Good luck on Saturday.
Thank you, sir.
I'm going to be there.
You will be.
Yeah, I'm going to come through and like take... I think I'm going to like
get... I'm incredibly nervous.
I'm going to get old school and like take some photos.
Are you for real?
I haven't done like a photo blog in a long
time. Can you get a good one of me?
Yeah, I'm going to get a bunch.
Thank you.
Well, maybe we'll take a selfie for Instagram.
I would love to.
My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. Follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. Follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery at I Am Database. He's very excited to mix a new song for you because we were just young bucks in 2013 mixing that song, and he thinks he's gonna really like fucking bang this one and knock it out of the park. And I have a new camera too because I hate the video of yours, even though it's so popular. I hate the actual video quality
because
we made your skin such a crazy color. Like the color on that one is so crazy.
I like it.
So I'm excited for this one to be a little more neutral and show the real Milo. This is going to be great. Follow us as a unit at Kinda Neat. That's changed since the last time we saw you because it used to be That's Kinda Neat.
That's Kinda Neat.
We're super official. Now we're at Kinda Neat. YouTube.com/KindaNeat where you are going to see Milo perform.
Buku Bread Co. Yeah.
You and your titles. I looked at your video the other day and somebody was mad that I capitalized your title. Because all your titles are lowercase.
They are.
Yeah, so I'll do it lowercase this time.
Dang. Okay. Thank
you. Even though that's against our MO, but I will do it for you.
Thank you.
I'm going to capitalize your name, though, at least. All
Scallops
caps.
Hotel.
Is it going to be Scallops Hotel?
It's not a Scallops Hotel. Song.
Okay. So we're, okay. Perfect.
Is that cool?
That's fine. That's great. what else? Facebook.com/KindaNeat and KindaNeat.net. Everything is wrapped up in a pretty package. if you are listening to this podcast still, which I have no idea why you would be listening to me do this, please subscribe to the podcast if you are not already subscribed. Download the podcast app on from the iTunes store, the App Store, whatever the fuck. Search for Kinda Neat. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. Leave a 5-star rating and a comment telling us who you want to see. And that is it. That was Milo.
Dope. Thank you.
I am Lee, and this was Kinda Neat. Thank you, guys.